You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Minutes after 8 o'clock here on the west coast of the United States. It's Friday, so our attention turns to the weekend, turns to food, and when we do that, we get the All Marine Radio head chef to join us from Grand Forks, North Dakota, high up there in the frozen tundra. Kim Holmes, what is up?
It's starting to thaw out. Good morning, everyone.
Yeah, it actually
I'm back on the scene in my flying machine.
It actually got into the 80s or something, didn't it? In the last few days?
It got in Fargo. Here it got in the high 70s, and it's raining and 60 degrees now, and it's going to be about 60 tomorrow, and then we're off on a 2-week 80 degree run.
Wow. Congratulations on that. But
finally coming, baby.
But you need a little bit of rain to wash all the grime and stuff away, yes, before everything gets nice. Have you had very much rain? Because once the snow goes away, there's this kind of grayish-brown residue that coats everything, and you need a little bit of rain to wash all that. Has that all been washed away yet? Or where do you guys sit?
The last 2 days, it rained yesterday and last night, and it's all day today, and that'll settle the dust and wash all the caca away.
Yeah, the winter crud that hangs out. So yeah. Well, that's good because then the city looks pretty and everything starts to green up, and then we remember why we live here. Right?
Well, I tell you what, this place in the summertime, folks, is gorgeous. And I'm sure everybody's hometown in the summertime is gorgeous. But this is really worthwhile waiting for.
Well, it better be because it's cold. It's cold in the wintertime.
Yes, it is.
So now we know. Yes, now we know why you stay. All right. Yeah. North Dakota ranks, just so you know, North Dakota ranks very high in a study that just got released that said 40% of Americans, of American households, can't afford middle class basics. But North Dakota ranks as a state, they have the lowest rank. There's a category, the poverty line, which is defined statistically here in the United States. And then there's an area called asset limited, income constrained, employed. So people that are working but aren't making enough to afford middle class stuff. And, North Dakota ranks pretty high in that. So just so you know, you ought to be proud of that.
Well, it is good that the jobs are pretty awesome, but it's because there's only 600,000 people in the state and lots of jobs. I think unemployment in Grand Forks somewhere between 1% and 2%.
Yeah, the problem is there's not enough workers. So when a company looks at moving to that part of the country, one of the issues is will we be able to find enough people to go ahead and make this thing go. Because the labor market is pretty tight. And so I don't know. So one of the things I've always said, though, is in what's known as flyover country, if you build it, they'll come here. People will move, and you can say what you want about the coal, but the quality of life is great. The education's great. You know, the automatic car starter and the seat heater are both great inventions. But if you can give people a good job that gives them a good life, they'll come. Trust me, they'll come. No doubt in my mind.
Yeah. Well said, Mac.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, when you think of, I mean, our country's changed so much from the time when you and I were young, when there was factories and you know, whether you got out of high school or got out of college, you know, you were going to go to school, you were going to retire, you were going to, you know, if you worked hard in your life, you'd retire, you'd be okay, you'd, you know, and again, it didn't matter if you graduated from high school or college, you were going to be, you know, you're going to be able to find a job in a factory or someplace that, you know, that paid the bills and that you were going to be part of the American middle class, you know, that was built by.
And that's what we grew up in.
Right.
And it was, you know, you could go on vacations. You could even, if you were a fisherman, you could even buy a boat.
Right.
And stuff like that. The kids had a chance to go to college, whether it was state or out-of-state colleges. I remember my first semester at Foothills Junior College in Los Gatos, California. My first semester cost me $15 a quarter plus books. Did you hear that?
Yeah, it's a little bit more expensive now, but let me tell you, California takes a lot of grief. One of the things California has done right is its community college system, where the credits are transferable to both the University of California system and the state system, which would be like Fullerton State, San Jose State, San Diego State. So California has kind of three levels of colleges. One is the junior college system, and they have junior colleges in just about every city, every fairly decent sized city in California. And I include, you know, cities like, you know, Fresno and Merced. I mean, they all have junior colleges.
San Jose, I mean, not San Jose, that's San Jose City, but on the coast,
nice.
South of San Francisco.
Nice.
We used to work there. But they had a junior college built when I was.
Yeah, and the best part is that you could go do that for cheap, you know. And I remember when we moved up to North Dakota, one of the things, I mean, if you're going to go to college, you're going to go, the choices really are the University of North Dakota, which is where Kim lives in Grand Forks, or North Dakota State University with a good football team. Down in Fargo. Either way, you're going to pay $6,000 a year, a semester, right? To go there, depending on if you have to live, you know, there or what, and it goes up from there. That's, and so California, I think, I mean, Catherine came out here and had to, she changed her major, so she had to do some lower division stuff. I want to say she paid somewhere between $1,000 and $1,500 a year to go to school. And so, I mean, come on, that's like nothing compared to what people are paying. So, but again, that was all part of, you know, life when we grew up.
California has always had a great public education system.
Yeah. But you know what?
Their junior colleges are probably as good as any place in the country.
Oh, no, mine was great. But I'll tell you what, one of the things California struggled with is, one of the things I learned being elected was you cannot throw enough money at education to make educators happy. Between their own, what they believe they should make, and then what they want to do with their programs, you could say, okay, look, we'll give you the whole budget. How's that? They'd say, that's not enough, bro. We're going to have to raise taxes. And so it's a beast. Education is a beast. And how do you do it? How do you do it effectively? Blah, 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 blah. And so it's not an easy thing to do, I wouldn't even say on the cheap. And now not only do you have to do that, but you have to feed students breakfast, lunch, and some kind of meal after school and provide daycare after school. The schools are now in that business. So much different than we were kids. My point, though, is America's changed a lot economically, you know, with NAFTA. You know, Kim's up in farm country. You know, the farmers up there say, look, we can compete with anybody in the world, but you've got to stop regulating and taxing us to death, out of business.
Yep.
You know, the Canadian farmer can use a chemical on his crop that costs him $10 a, you know, whatever the unit is. Because of our EPA and the FDA, we're not allowed to use that chemical. The chemical we have to use costs 10 times that much. And people are calling that a level playing field. And, oh, by the way, he can import, because of NAFTA, he can import his crop into the United States. What? Yeah. And so you've regulated us, you know, you're attempting to regulate us out of business. Stop doing it or make it level. If he uses that chemical, he can't bring that crop into the United States. But that's not a part of NAFTA. So it's changed. Farming has changed a ton, from having lots of migrant farm workers to you have lots of big machines that will work on multiple farms, and they do all the work. So but this isn't this vanishing middle class that has been the backbone of the United States is something that both parties, you know, ought to address. And it needs to be about jobs, and at some point you got to protect your industries, and that means tariffs. And so
yeah.
I don't. So anyway, all right. Let's. So, have you started grilling yet? Have you? You got it out? You dusted it off?
Yep. Tied it up. Burned out the carbon, so to speak.
And so, are you?
Yeah, kind of for half an hour on high.
Okay, so but have you cooked anything on the grill yet?
Not outside.
What are we waiting? What are we waiting for?
Well, good question.
Thank you.
The weather's finally warming up. I'll be cooking out there in the next couple of weeks. But,
okay, look. Once it gets above what? How warm do we need the weather to be? Once we get to 40, that's summertime weather. We can grill in that. No.
50. 50. I set my bottom at 50.
Okay. All right. Well,
and then it's short shorts and sandals and flip flops and tank tops.
Okay, look, I don't. Your attire is irrelevant to me. I'm just concerned that we're already not grilling. I find that stunning. I'm shocked.
Well, I'm thrilled that you're shocked. That's the way it is.
Here's your assignment. Okay, before Monday, grill something. Okay, it could be a hot dog. Okay, just grill something. All right.
Okay.
All right, so write that down.
I will. You know what? Beth and I were talking about hot dogs today. I'll go down to Laddie's and buy those natural casing dogs that I love so much and put them on there and
have a hot dog.
We don't need
to do anything fancy. Okay, we need to have a little breakthrough moment here. That's what I'm looking for. A little bit of a breakthrough moment so that we can say, yeah.
We'll talk about it next Friday.
Okay, we're going to talk about what you grilled.
Yes,
okay.
All right.
I'm okay with that. What,
all right.
Hold on, here's an email question. Mac, I have a question about oils. I've heard the chef talk about putting olive oil on steaks before you grill them. Is he using any specific type of olive oil? Is there a difference between olive oil and other oils I might use? Why olive oil, I guess, is my question.
You, you can use, the thing is when you grip, it's about the burn point. You know, when does oil start to smoke? And canola oil is probably the best, but I use from California, it's California Olive Ranch. And you can buy it at Walmart in a half gallon, jug. It's a liter, actually. Oh, God, I didn't realize it's that. 1.4 a liter. But I tell you what, it tastes like, Italian olive oil. We use it exclusively. We get it at Walmart. It's cheap. I used to order it in from California for the restaurant and it was really expensive. And then Beth was in Walmart and said, Jesus, here's your olive oil. And it's about a third of the price. it's a matter of preference.
Okay.
Canola oil has a high burn point. So does olive oil. Canola is the best. The flavor, that's why I use it. I like the olive oil. Now, when we grilled our fish, we have a skillet that has grill lines in it, you know, little bumps, like the grates.
Right.
And we bought some red snapper and tuna last week or this week. And we oiled it up, got it to room temperature. When you grill fish with the skin on, and you should go with the skin on because that's what side you put down first. But you cut some slashes in the across the fish, and then you rub in whatever seasoning mix you're going to use, and then with olive oil, and then you make sure it's well lubed, and then you have to wipe your grill down a bunch when you're cooking fish on a grill with a rag with olive oil or any oil, canola oil. That doesn't matter, but you don't want anything to stick, and it's got to be all hot all the way, so it doesn't stick to the grill. And if it doesn't, if it's not real hot on the eye, your fish will stick to the grill, the skin will come off, and you have a mess. And then you don't only turn it maybe in 2 to 3 minutes, depending on how thick your fish is. But yeah,
for oil is you want it to have a high burn point?
Yes.
Okay. And olive oil has that as well as canola oil. And then beyond that, it becomes a matter of taste. I'm surprised. That's right. Yes. That's what you said. I think. Yeah. No.
Yeah.
Oh, nothing. I'm surprised that the number, there's all this flavored, There's so much variance in oil now. It's amazing.
Oh, it's remarkable. You can get oils flavored with all kinds of herbs, and you can do it yourself. You can just take even if you use olive oil or canola oil, you can stick tarragon in there. The whole leaf, the branch, everything, and you sit it on the counter for a while. You can put lemon peel in oils, and you can make it any way you want. It's your call.
Got it.
But I'm pretty much a straight oil person, and that's just my preference.
Got it.
And I love this California Olive Ranch. It's probably as good a buy as you can find. And all the olives are grown in California. And it's really exceptional.
You know, a friend told me that, what did he tell me? He told me that, that there was, California has a law that stipulates what has to be in different grades of olive oil. And he says most states don't have that. I said, what? He said, yeah, most states don't have that. So you could say, you know, your olive oil is XYZ, and it's just your labeling. But California says that if you have, if you're going to call it this, it has to be this. And then he said, that's why you want to buy California olive oil. I said, oh, I didn't know that.
And when you buy Italian olive oil, imported, about 30 to 40% of that oil is bootleg, and it isn't what it says on the bottle. So pay attention, and that's why it's best to buy olive oil that's local. And since we live with this California olive oil, it's fresh. Olive oil lasts about a year on your shelf, and then it starts to get a little bit stale. That's just pointed to the bottle and said there's an expiration date. And so,
All right. Let me just, I have to update a breaking story. News reports now that there's been at least 10 fatalities reported at Santa Fe High School outside of Houston. One suspect has been detained. Another one is in custody. So news as that breaks this morning. Text messages, 50 degrees? Come on. We grill outdoors when it's zero in January here in Montana. Hey. You might need to get a little bit more butch, man. You used to pride yourself on having a little butch going. It sounds 50 degrees, man. Come on.
Listen, my Harley Owners Club, I did 2 prime ribs on 2 Webers.
Yeah.
And it was about, it was below zero, okay? And it was in...
you're giving me a history.
We were having our annual Christmas party.
I know, but you're giving me a history lesson. I mean, people want to know, like, have you got...
I'm telling you how cold it was. How much...
Have you gotten soft? Have you gotten soft in your old age? And you say, hey, look, I'm going to take the... How old are you? 70 what?
4. 74.
Okay, you can take a pass on, like, I'm 74. I'm not going out there before I'm 50. Are you butch? Young people can go out there when it's zero. That ain't me. You can take that pass. Do you want the 74 pass on this?
I've been there, done that. That's all I'm saying. And I grill when I want to grill. And the rest of, you know, if you want to go out there at below zero or at 32, God bless you. Strap on your dog strap and go for it. Take your gloves and your thongs.
Or both.
And go for it. But I'm happy in my groove.
That's what I wanted to get to, man. You can be, like, just be you. But, you know, used to be kind of, like, used to like having a little bit of macho to you. But 50 degrees does sound a little bit warm. I think anything over 32, come on, when you've been hanging around zero for most of the winter, 32 degrees, that's a heat wave. I'm just a little surprised that you haven't grilled yet, all right? I don't want to make it a personal thing, but I'm surprised. I would think you would like rip the cover off, fire that thing up, like, yeah, because he has gas run straight to his grill. So he doesn't have to go get a propane tank. All he has to do is turn the sumbitch on. So I'm surprised. So
well,
I think
I can see where you're surprised and where, the Montana man is surprised, but that's showbiz, baby. You know, and also, I have always run under the mantra of Jersey rules. I make my own goddamn rules.
Oh, see, now you're gonna get all, now you're gonna get all butch. That's what I was saying. You can.
No, I'm not getting all butch. I'm just telling you how I've rolled since the first day I met you, and I gave you your screwdriver.
That's right. He did. He loaned me a screwdriver. That's the basis of our relationship. Me trying to fix something. Okay. The another text from a buddy of mine. He's a Sacramento guy. Yeah. From Oakland to Sactown, the Bay Area and back down. That's right. That appears. That's right. So, you know, notice that Napa didn't get mentioned in that. Yeah. So in the song California Love.
Yeah.
That the Napa doesn't appear in that. Neither does Laguna Beach. Okay. Sactown does. So my boy Maceo from Sactown, he said, and nobody asked you when you went to a 4-year school where you did your first 2 years, right? It wasn't like we went to college and, you know, it was, you did it, because my parents were, you know, we were north of middle class, but, you know, my mom said, look, we've got 4 kids that, you know, might go to college. You know, so the program is you're going to junior college, knock out your general education stuff, and then, you know, if you still want to go to school, then we'll pay for it. But yeah, 4 years, yeah, go sell that someplace else. And now I have friends that say, man, I got to keep working. I got to put my kids through 4 years of college. I'm like, you're stupid then. They're like, what do you? I'm like, yeah, ain't happening, bro. Ain't happening. So anyway, Mace is right. Mace was a baseball player. Could not hit. He couldn't hit water if he fell out of a boat, but he could run like the wind. Yeah. So he was like leading the city in hitting, and he couldn't hit. It's like, hey man, Mace's leading the city in hitting. You're like, what? He can't hit. He couldn't hit water if he fell out of a boat. Yeah, Mac, he's hitting 6 foot. Yeah, he can run like the wind. Yep, he can run like the wind. So he's now a big real estate guy in the Bay Area. So where nobody can live. Everybody's below the poverty level in the Bay Area. That place is a joke. All right. The email. What do we have to do to stop the school shootings? In order to stop somebody with a gun, there got to be another person with a gun there. And again, you can have a community debate about who that should be in your community. Some people have opted for teachers. I just got a text message from Maceo. It starts with the letter F and it ends with U. What? Where? Why the hate, Mace? Come on. No, he could hit. He could hit a little bit. He could run. That's why he would hit like 500. Lead the city in hitting, Alan Maceo. But he could run. To me, look, we can all say, and again, Kim and I are not from the North Dakota area. My opinion on guns, I was not raised around them. I never fired a gun until I was in the military, in the Marine Corps. And so... My view on guns was very different until I moved to North Dakota. And then there's all these people that own guns. They handle them responsibly. They hunt. And so we have some issues in the country. One is we have crazy people and we're afraid to take their weapons away from them because they have their rights. We have to get over that. But two, no matter what anybody thinks about the gun laws or anything like that, there's 300 million guns. These evidently shootings today were done with a shotgun, which are all over the country. And so if you don't have somebody at that school, and we'll see if this school did or not. I was talking earlier that Colleen's High School, the superintendent they're studying the issue for 5 months. So, and my point is, hire the security people on a temporary basis till the school lets out, study it, but have something in place when they come back. And there better be somebody with a weapon there, because that's the only thing that stops somebody that's crazy. And I know and I hate it, but it's the way it is. We didn't deal with this shit when we were kids, so that's my opinion. Kim, any thoughts on stopping school shooters?
Well, I'm going to think it's got to be a local decision, but like I grew up without I had a .22 rifle that I rabbit hunted and squirt hunted with, but other than that, you know, I don't know about the guns. I just know that it's so easy for anyone, crazy or not, to get a gun, and I know in North Dakota, they're very responsible with guns, and they use them all the time for hunting, and sport shooting like traps and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Competition shooting, but they're shooting at clay pigeons. So, it just bothers me like it does you. I don't know what to do about it. I just don't.
I do. You gotta have people with weapons in the schools. And again, people can say that's horrible and all the rest. And yeah, it is. But let me tell you, if you're a member of a school board and you don't do that, and we'll see what this school had, but if you don't do that and kids get killed on your watch, you have to live with that. Nobody can lift that burden from you, and you'll die. You'll go to your grave with your family saying he was never the same after that happened. Why not? Because he felt that he was partly responsible for it. Because he didn't do what people said that they should do. They decided to study the issue, and while it was being studied, that happened, and he's never gotten over it. And so, to me, there is no recourse. There's only one thing to do, and that is protect your children. And, you know, you hear that guy, Andrew, what's Andrew's last name? Andrew Pollock. You hear him, the anguish in his voice talking about what happened to his daughter, who was shot 9 times at Marjorie Douglas High School in Florida, and how this should never happen. And, you know, that day when he was at the White House talking, he said, you know, I was at the Department of Education. There's a security guard in the elevator. And he kind of talks about that. How do you think that made me feel? No security guard at my daughter's school, but here you got one in your elevator. Why do you need one in your elevator? To keep you guys safe? What about my daughter who got shot 9 times? So, yeah, and so I mean, you can feel the anger in, you know, in all the different places that we have security. And, you know, and then we have this, for whatever reason, young people feel that it's the way it's when they snap, it's something that they do now. And that's bring a gun to school. I don't get that part. But there's, again, the world is the way it is. It ain't the way you want it to be. And so unless you have somebody else with a gun who's willing to do what that school resource officer did in Illinois 2 days ago, which is run down the hallway when the guy's shooting at you to confront him and shoot him and stop him, you know, unless you have people willing to do that, then this stuff is going to happen. So it sucks. Hold on. Food question. Mac, I'm a charcoal griller, and I've never cooked with indirect heat. Could the chef coach me through how do I set up my grill so I can cook with indirect heat on my grill? Chef?
Well, now they have these kind of like half-moon containers where you dump your charcoal in and start it.
Really?
And you start it on one side of the grill and try, and then when the coals are forming in your charcoal, you lift that container off and spread the coals on half the grill, and then the other half is doesn't have any heat, but you put your lid on your grill, and that does a convection effect.
Hey, Kim, can I
what it and cooks underneath on the inside that doesn't have any heat.
What would you call the charcoal container that goes inside the grill? I just did a search on charcoal container, and I got all these things.
Some are circles, and some are half moons, and they have a handle on them. And so you can get charcoal on your grill.
Yeah. What do you call them? What are they called?
I have chimneys.
Chimneys?
Yeah.
Are you?
And that's the guess I can come with.
I thought you were serious there for a second. No, when I Googled charcoal container, I get the container that you put your charcoal in that sits next to the grill. Okay. I Googled charcoal container, and one of the images that came up was a galvanized trash can, the kind our parents used to have.
That's one hell of a grill you have.
I know.
I just think I'm sure they sell them where every grill is sold, and wherever you buy your charcoal, the key is to really get a big load of charcoal because it's only going to be in half the grill, and you want to create intense heat in there, and then the coals will calm down. But you're still cooking on the side to get it like you're putting ribs on there.
Right.
I
found one.
Indirect.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I found, hold on, I'll tell you. You can buy it at Lowe's. It's called a Weber aluminum charcoal basket. You can buy it for $15. And as Kim said, what it allows you to do is it allows you to stack the charcoal up vertically and that way you have enough of it to create the heat that you need to do the searing and the indirect cooking. Because you can't put a little bit of charcoal in there. You still need enough charcoal to create the heat you need to cook. I've done that a few times where I didn't put enough charcoal in it. And it makes your cooking time a lot longer. Or two, you don't get it cooked well enough, and that makes nobody happy. In a family of medium rare,
you got to fill it up,
right,
folks? You got to fill that container up, and then you'll be good to go.
Yeah, it's actually. So I'm looking at there's that one. So it's called a basket, aluminum charcoal basket, and then it shows it sitting inside the Weber kettle. And you can have, and the cool thing about this is if you put it in the basket, if you want to, you can go ahead and move them, right? If you got some kind of long, either knife or like a knife sharpener that you could move it with, you could actually move it when you wanted to move it. So you could use the whole grill for a while using heat, and then you could shove this all into one side and blah, blah, blah. Here's another email. Hey, Mac, I've seen pictures of charcoal stacked around the exterior of the grill with the inside being empty. What say the chef about that? I've never seen that.
Well, I've never heard that. But if somebody has tried it and it worked for them, you give it a try. What I would do, though, is I would use that basket or chimney and get the coals going hot, and then with that you spread them around the grill.
Okay, let's get the terminology. It's the basket, okay? The chimney.
Okay,
because let me tell you, The chimney is what you use. There's a device out there known as the chimney, and that's how you start charcoal. And you start it in the chimney, and then you dump it in, and it's got a handle. And it's got the one I'm looking at has a bottom that opens up. So you start this thing, it's vented on the side, and it's more vertical than horizontal. So supposedly the charcoal is ready faster. That makes sense?
Yes.
Okay. All right. All right. So that's the chimney. The chimney is the starter. The basket, okay, just so everybody knows, the basket is what goes inside the grill to containerize your charcoal so that you can grill on a portion of your grill and use indirect heat, and it's organized very well. Your charcoal is organized. This is called charcoal organization, okay? Just so everybody knows.
Yeah.
Right, but you've never heard. I just looked up, I found a picture of charcoal on the outside. How to set up charcoal grilling. And it is, it's a Weber kettle, and it's got neatly stacked rows of two charcoal briquettes, right? And it's black like Kingsford charcoal. And then there's two, it's two wide, and then it's, then there's one in between that. And that is stacked around the edge with the middle section of the grill being empty. How about that?
Wow.
Yeah.
How about that?
That looks like a lot of work. It looks like a lot of work to me, though. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
It looks like a lot of work. And then there's another one that here's kind of a crescent. It looks like a big C. And then they put on top of the regular charcoal, there's some, it looks like those chips that you use to smoke. They're in there for a little bit of flavor.
Yeah.
That's kind of interesting. Now, here's another configuration with the aluminum baskets. This is kind of interesting, Kim. It both baskets are shoved to the center, and so so I would say it's in this kind of the center core of it, and so then they cook over the center, and then they move to the outside. There's a different configuration.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow, 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 wow. Ooh. Yeah, there's all kinds of geometric designs. I'm very impressed. Very impressed. Okay.
That is cool.
That, yeah, it is cool. And they, who knew? The geometry of charcoal. Wait, here's another one.
Fantastic.
Here's another one. Hey, Mac, how about this? Go to the store, get a piece of sheet metal, bring it home, and then cut it so that you can put it across a portion of your grill. Maybe a third to half. Cut it right, round it a little bit. You can stick that puppy in there every time. Put your charcoal in there, and it keeps the charcoal on one half of the grill, and you're good to go. You don't even need to buy a basket. Okay, you need to be a sheet metal worker to do that, though, bro. Right, Kim? Are you doing it? I'm not doing that.
Absolutely. I was just thinking, well, I don't have a torch at home.
Yeah, I'm not doing that. I'm not doing that.
But I know what they're saying.
Yeah.
And that's one way to do it.
Yeah, so if you do a search on charcoal container inside the grill, you'll find a whole bunch of these pictures of how different people set up their grill. And so what you see is the center. And so what this allows for, Kim, is kind of like the convection effect of the grill. But in every one of these, either the center or is open, so that you get enough heat on the outside, and yet you're not gonna scorch your food. So interesting.
Good.
All right, Mac. I don't know if this chef has ever answered this question. He probably has. If so, I'd apologize, but I don't really care if he's answered it. I just need an answer. All right. Everybody needs to relax out there. Okay. It's Friday.
Yeah,
you're supposed to be happy. What is his favorite cut of meat to grill? I don't know that we've ever asked you that. I know what your favorite steak is, but does it change when you grill?
No, it doesn't. Whether it's a filet, a ribeye, or a porterhouse, or a T-bone, you got to sear one side. And, you got to cook on hot heat, and you can, if you want to, if you got like a 2-inch, porterhouse, you flame it on both sides, and then you set it to the side that's turned off. It has no heat on it, and so you don't get direct flame, and let it cook till you get the right doneness. And there you go.
Hey, let me just tell you, I'm now.
It doesn't matter what steak you use.
It doesn't. No. What? That's not. No. Again, once again, we have to go through this. You and your low self-esteem. What do you like? And does it change from normal steak grilling to outdoor grilling?
I like porterhouse. Okay.
Porterhouse? I thought you liked ribeye.
I like to grill a 2-inch porterhouse.
Damn it.
And it's about around 2 pounds, 2.5 pounds, and I black pepper and a little salt, lots and lots and lots of black pepper, olive oil. I'll throw it on the grill. I like my steak rare to medium rare, and then I'll flip it and get my grill marks going on both on one side and then the other side, and then I'll set it off. And let it cook a little longer so it doesn't burn. And that is a porterhouse. It's half on one side of the bone. It's bone. It's the filet mignon. On the other side is a strip steak, sirloin, the New York strip. So that's my very favorite.
All right. So bottom line is. Your preference doesn't change whether it's indoors or outdoors, and your favorite steak to grill is a porterhouse.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's another question with a picture. Picture has a Weber kettle. It has the charcoal baskets on each side, and then there's a rectangle in the middle that's open with a drip pan. Question, Mac, why did they have the drip pan in their grill? Kim? Why do they have the drip pan in
their
grill?
They have a drip pan in the grill so the drip doesn't fall on the charcoal whatever way, and that causes it to flame up and burn whatever you cook. That's why you have a drip pan. Or if you also want to, with the juices of whatever you're cooking, you can make a sauce out of those drippings also.
Oh. I've never seen that. Here's a Montana guy. I'm normally a ribeye guy, but a good marinated porterhouse on the grill is awesome with some sautéed onions.
Yes, it is.
He's a foodie.
100% correct.
He's a foodie.
And a man.
Here's an insert for a Webble. I've never seen this. There's a charcoal basket, okay, and then so it's made of sheet metal, and then there's a compartment on the separator, so that takes up it looks like about half the grill, and there's a charcoal basket on the side of the basket that borders on the open area. There's another little kind of V-shaped compartment in the charcoal basket, and it says water reservoir. What would the water reservoir be for? Any idea?
To create steam.
Yeah, is that why? Do I want that?
And impart moisture in the mix there.
Is steam a good thing?
Well, it depends what you're doing. Yeah, if for fish it would be. I don't know if I would never heard of it being used for meat.
Okay, no fish. I'm interesting. Wow, some of these configurations. No, some of these people that do grilling stuff are crazy. But I never knew all this stuff existed. Who knew? And the whole thing with baskets, I think the basket thing is a good idea because, you know, No, I'm not going to tell you how stupid I'm not going to tell you how stupid I am. But sometimes I do stupid stuff. And honestly, what happens is I don't build the charcoal high enough. And then what happens is I don't have enough heating. I don't have enough heat. I'm running out of heat, man. And it doesn't work very well. Doesn't work very well. So these things seem to solve it if you're a charcoal person. Wow. So I also like the idea of, you know, the edges with the heat around the edges and the center free. I don't know why I like that. I just it looks cool to me. So anyway. All right. One more. Here's another email. Mac, I have one of those, and I would tell you it's one of the best things I ever bought. I saw it at a swap meet. Some dude with the long hair and a beard. I think he was a Vietnam vet. I think he was a Vietnam veteran. Yeah, those Vietnam veterans, they do crazy shit like that. But he had all these cool things for the grill. And I looked at it and I pointed and I said, "Hey man, what's this for?" And he explained to me about indirect cooking and how this segmented the charcoal still allowed you to pile it up vertically.
Yeah.
And it was very cool. P.S. The chef is exactly right. The water compartment is when you're grilling fish, there's more moisture and it keeps the fish from drying out. Give him my compliments. Well done, Kimmy. You got that one right. Nice going. Matt, here's another email. Mac, there's a company called Vortex that makes a bunch of these products. Ooh, who knew that? Vortex. There you have it. Vortex makes different devices to contain your charcoal. How about that? Who knew? Look, the
well, you learn something every day.
You do. You do.
I think it's great. I think the technology in grilling is awesome.
You know what? Honestly, I think it's cool too, but I had no idea it existed. Here's another one. Hey, Mac, I learned about this stuff, segmenting your grill and all that, from a friend who was grilling wings. You need the outside of the grill to get all the wings on. If you use the inner part, there's not enough space. So he had this basket, and all the charcoal was there. And the wings all went on the outside, and so that made grilling the wings easier because that's how he controlled the heat and still used the biggest area of the grill. I was pretty impressed. And at times, he would even invert the grill when he needed more space. Okay, the only way I can describe this is, have you seen when somebody has a collar on their dog? Not a collar, but a basket. You know, they have one of those plastic things on the head of their dog because their dog can't, you know what I'm saying? Okay, it looks like that. And then he sent a picture. So the normal way would be the big end up. But if you even want a smaller surface where the heat's coming through, you turn it so that the small end's up. You pile the charcoal in, and then you have more cooking surface. Wow, these people are pretty creative, Kim. Who knew?
That's creative.
That is. But you know what? When a fat man wants to eat, he's going to create just about anything, yes?
I can testify.
Fat people who want to eat, they'll invent anything.
And one of my mantras is improvisation.
Exactly. You know, here's
open the refrigerator door. You see a bunch of what the hell is this? And then you say, "Well, I got to invent something." So we go for it.
Mac, I'm not the brightest bulb in the chandelier, to steal one of your phrases. I just use my dog's metal dog dish.
God.
They're cheap. Yeah. You can get them anywhere, and they work great. You don't need all these bullshit containers. Go buy yourself a dog dish or take your dog's stainless steel dog dish and screw Vortex. They don't need your money. Besides, I'm one of those people in the Alice category, okay? I need to keep my money. My dog doesn't need that bright chrome dish. Good call, man. Good call. That Vortex thing probably costs about $50 too. And you can go buy a dog dish for $6.
Yeah.
It is. Let me tell you. And he sends a picture. It is. It's a straight up, like, stainless steel dog dish full of charcoal sitting in the bottom of a Weber kettle. It's awesome.
Yeah.
It's.
God, that's rich.
Isn't it? But you know what?
Yeah, it is.
You know, but these kind of things, they keep you from burning the food because you don't have to cook the food over direct heat the whole time. You could actually serve food that doesn't have the black crust on it. How about that, Kim?
Well, that's what I wish my dad had it when I was growing up. I never ate barbecued chicken or barbecued wings that were black. Until I left home.
That was the way of things.
Yeah. But the key, where he went wrong, was he didn't grill them first and then dip them in barbecue sauce and then put them back on the grill to caramelize the wings or the chicken. My mother started it out in the sauce.
Yes,
and that's because of the sugars in your barbecue sauce. That would burn.
Yes, that's how you do it. That's how you do it. And then you get the spray bottle, right?
Yep.
You get the spray bottle out there, and then you get the Bismarck press going. When what little juice is left in that chicken or beef, you squeeze it right out. Let's dry that shit out. But that's how we grew up. It tastes great, Dad. This is awesome. I love this chicken. I love these burgers.
You got another deer? I'm a little dry.
It's true though. That's how the majority of us grew up. I'm a little bit of a foodie. Kim's kind of made me into a foodie. And my green egg is about as foodie as I get. And then I like to cook my mom's stuff, but
it's the ultimate, folks.
Yeah, but but you have to know how to use. Honestly, I mean, I've been misusing the green egg for a long time. I'm using it well now, and I'm happy to say that it does very, very quality work. In fact, I should post a recipe. For flank steak that is absolutely, positively delicious. Hold on. Give me 10 seconds to run into my kitchen and grab the recipe, and I'll read it to you, and you can comment on it. So hold on. In fact, let me play a little Green Onions. I'll be right back. Don't touch that dial. Don't go anywhere. Wolfman Jack, coming back.
And Mac is on the clock, folks.
And we're back. My buddy from Napa used to say that. He found out that I did a radio show. And so we're in Afghanistan, and we're working in our combat operations center. And he sat about 10 feet behind me. And all of a sudden, he'd just yell that shit in the middle of the day. And we're back! I'm like, what the, I'm like, what are you doing? And he'd like, and he'd be sitting there laughing. And I mean, he's not a simpleton, you know? He's a smart guy. Went to the Naval Academy, but he got the biggest kick out of that. Hey, yelling, and we're back! I'm like, shut up with that shit. Yeah. Anyway, flank steak marinade. A third of a cup of peanut oil, a third of a cup of soy sauce, a half teaspoon of garlic, 1 tablespoon of A1 sauce, a dash of Worcestershire sauce, and a dash of brown sugar. Take a mallet and work the flank steak over. Blend this concoction in a blender, marinate overnight. So, and let me just tell you that recipe is to die for. Absolutely, absolutely, positively to die for. So that's Kathleen's flank steak marinade. And let me just tell you, it is requested. It's Patrick's favorites. It's probably Patrick's favorites. So anyway, sound like. Hey, let me ask you this: why peanut oil?
Because of the high burn point.
Oh, really?
And it has a pretty decent flavor. Peanut oil, canola, the peanut oil has a nice flavor. It's a mild flavor, and that's all.
Okay. All right. Here's an email entitled "Hot Dogs." Mac, what kind of hot dog? He started to go down the hot dog road, and you shut it down like the poor host that you are. Let the man speak about hot dogs. Set the hot dog free today. Kim loves the hot dog. Kim's life, he owned this. He had this great restaurant, but what he really wanted was a hot dog stand. So make everybody smart. When you talk about hot dogs, what kind of hot dogs do you get?
I get from the local butcher store. They make these natural casing hot dogs. And it's beef and pork, and I like to steam them. A steamed hot dog, you know, drop them in water, and then I like a steamed hot dog bun. But if you're going to use, and every once a year, Laddie's a foot-long hot dog, and they're absolutely great. It's over the 4th of July, and I'll go in and buy a dozen footlongs, and then it'll take me about 2 weeks to eat them. So basically, I have a footlong hot dog diet.
You don't read about that. You don't read about that footlong hot dog diet too much. I haven't seen that in on the internet too much.
No. Well, you know, the key is the local bakery here bakes foot-long hot dog buns. And so some people like to grill their buns, and some people like to grill the hot dogs. And if you do that, folks, you do not do it on high heat. And you keep the spatula so you can roll them. You put them horizontally across the grate, and so you can roll them and get them browned evenly. And then one part of your grill should be turned off, and then you set them on there. Now, if you like the little black lines on it, then leave them on longer, but that's not my thing.
That's not your thing?
No. When I cook bratwurst and the bigger sausages, I like I like to boil them a little bit just to kind of par cook them. And then and in beer, I like to boil them in 100% beer, whether you're a light or dark beer drinker. That would be your preference.
Okay.
And then I finish on the grill. And the same way with a hot dog. You don't want high heat. And then you get a nice, even golden brown. I was at a party Kentucky Derby party.
Yeah.
And they had beautiful bratwurst. And they came downstairs to the living room from the grill.
Yeah.
And they were just dried. Wow. And crinkly, and I thought, oh my, there's no juice. He cooked all the juice out of it. I didn't say a word.
You didn't say a word?
As soon as I spotted it, I knew they were ruined. So you have to pay attention when you're cooking dogs and brats. You don't want to, get the skin so black. That especially with the bratwurst, where they're crispy on the outside and not crispy in the center. That's why if you boil them in beer, you get a little beer flavor in there, and then you finish them on the grill and on medium heat, and then you're in the front row.
You know, but Kim, I mean this the majority of how should I say it? The majority of this program has been devoted to not burning food that you're grilling. So if you can't crack the code on configuring your charcoal so you're not, I mean, for instance, it would be tantamount to taking a skillet and turning it on high heat as you have, and then trying to cook like that, you know? Chances are when that thing gets that hot, it's not going to turn out well for you, okay? So there's all these different configurations by these people who do a lot of grilling so that you can use the heat, right? And you can use the heat and you can still, eat food that tastes great. It doesn't have to be like that. And so if you're coping with somebody who does that, tell them to listen to this segment and they can cook better food. My cousin Tom was telling a story about his father-in-law. He said, oh my God, he burns everything. And then, you know, and then you slap some sauce on it, and it's the way we grew up. It's not the best way to do it. And so the key thing is you're using a grill, right? And you should regulate it just like you're able to regulate your stove or your oven as you cook with that. But the problem is charcoal doesn't behave like that. So what do? You segment it. You can put it in one of these aluminum charcoal baskets so that you have, but it's, come on now, everybody needs to bear down. This is crazy stuff, I tell you.
Yeah. And the grilling, if you put, wood chips that have been soaked in water for a half an hour or so, to impart a certain smoke, whether it's cherry wood or oak or whatever, mesquite, you use indirect heat. You know, use your grill. Don't just throw stuff on the direct heat like Max says and burn the crap out of it. And then otherwise, order out.
Exactly. Well, no, if you're going to do that, don't invite anybody over. Come on. I mean, only a jackass would do that. Okay, do that when if you're going to invite people. Yeah, do it for yourself. Don't invite people.
Foolish about grilling, and then you'll get a lot of RSVP saying, Gee, I'll be out of town that day. I'm sorry, but thanks for the invitation.
Yeah, my dog is going to get his ass shaved that day. I can't attend.
Oh, God.
Sorry.
And that doesn't happen to me very once. I had to endure it for a few years with my brother-in-law. But in his grilling, and I just dreaded it. I just dreaded it. And he would never let me take that hot dog, it's ready for me. No, it's not. No, it's
I got it. And you know,
it's
you
not
can't.
Black yet.
But again, that's how we ate it. You went, somebody's going to grill. You know, and you put more mustard or ketchup on it, whatever you were putting on the hot dog, and that's how they came, right? You got hot dogs that were grilled on a barbecue, they came black.
Yeah.
Sad. But look, and this is our point, it doesn't have to be that way. There's a better way. There's a better way. So, please.
And folks, if you're cooking other things on the grill, like hamburgers, get a pan, fill it with water, put your hot dogs in, put that on the grill, and then you definitely won't black your hot dog. And you'll steam your hot dog, and then you have something that's edible.
Oh, yeah, that is the point, isn't it, that it's edible? Go figure.
It always helps. When you're having guests, it always helps that they like what you're serving them, that they can eat it and swallow it without drinking a gallon of beer or whatever with it.
That's funny. That's funny. Yeah. All right, if you go to the website right now, if you go to the blog page, you'll see flank steak marinade. All right, if you click on that, it'll take you to the page that has the recipe for it. And I will tell you this, it is absolutely delicious. Absolutely delicious.
Yeah.
I should post the carrot casserole recipe, because if you have that
we do it quite a bit.
If you,
I absolutely love it. The first time I had it, I made Beth get the recipe.
Threw a fit.
At your house.
Threw a fit.
And the steak in the bag. Oh, my God.
No, but the carrot casserole is great. So, no, flank steak with either baked potato, little mashed potato, carrot casserole kind of thing, salad. With some salad, it's pretty easy to do. You just have to get after it the day before. I will tell you this. There's a photo app that I use on my phone. It's called PhotoScan by Google Photos. It's awesome. You take one picture of it, and then all of a sudden that picture comes up, and you're still looking at what you're taking a picture of, and it gives you four dots, and then you have to put the camera, you have to move the camera to cover the dot, and once you cover the dot, it starts doing its thing, and then it tells you, now go to this dot, you go to that dot, and so it takes the initial picture, and then it takes the segments that you do, and it puts it all together in one picture, so you have and then it takes the shine out of it. So very cool. It's called PhotoScan by Google, so you can scan photos with your phone. So I use that, and so that is my that is Kathleen's flank steak marinade. That is a favorite. Here's another email. Mac, I will try your flank steak marinade because of what Kim says about the recipes your mom has. My question is there a length of time that is good to marinate something where more simply allows the meat to begin to disintegrate? Chef?
No. You can marinate something up to 2 days. Beef, you can't. Chicken, you can marinate for 24 hours. Pork for 24 hours. the least amount of time you marinate is 12 hours.
The least.
Because you want to the marinade to penetrate your meat.
Okay. All right. So now let's just say if I wanted to marinate something 2 days for 48 hours, is that too much?
No. When Montana Man said he liked the porterhouse, he marinates it.
Yeah.
You could marinate a porterhouse up to a couple of days. 24 hours should be plenty of time, but won't hurt anybody if you put. For 48 hours.
Okay.
Right. But 24 hours should be plenty.
All right. So 24 hours, plenty of time. All right. I like that. Here's another one. I have friends that are really into grilling, and honestly, I am amazed at the devices they have for their charcoal grill. He and I went to a swap meet, and he took me to a section of the swap meet that I'd never really been to, but it was a bunch of people that had grilling accessories, and holy smokes, there was everything you could ever imagine. And you are right, that one little basket is for water, and that's designed for cooking fish. My friend also used it while cooking pork because he liked his pork to be more moist. It's simply a device that you can use when you're seeking to keep moisture around the food. However, the key was, as he used to say, don't burn it. All these devices are means of managing the heat of charcoal, which is not as governable as your stove or your oven. Very interesting, though.
And with that water unit, folks, you can. It's really good with chicken, also.
That
pork, chicken, and fish.
And so you could create space underneath. So if you segment the charcoal, and then if you have a drip pan, and you put a little water in the drip pan, kind of like we do with turkey, kind of like you taught me how to do with a turkey, then
yes.
Interesting.
And then you're in the front row.
There's another email. Mac, this is how I cook my hams and turkeys. I simply segment the charcoal like that, and I'm a charcoal guy, so I don't like cooking with propane. But if you're going to smoke something or cook something that's thick, that thing needs to go for several hours, so you got to have enough heat. The key is regulating the heat. You can cook some awesome things on simply a Weber kettle if you know how to do these things. And these little devices that people have built over the years are absolutely, positively awesome. All they do is they contribute to better meals. One of the other things I would echo that the chef said is by clearing out the area underneath the charcoal and having it on either side of whatever you're cooking, you eliminate the flame, which is a big source of scorching whatever you're cooking. I'm a huge fan of that. So I laughed when you said about the spray bottle a while ago. That was a standard piece of equipment when my dad used to grill. The flame going up to his head, him standing in the middle of it, and then getting the spray bottle out.
I've seen that. Oh, God.
But my favorite thing you've said today has to do with using the doggy dish as a charcoal container. That is about as white trash as it gets, but effective and utilitarian, no doubt.
That's rich.
Enjoy the program.
That is the statement of the day.
I just use my dog's dish What the hell? Your poor. I hope you cut the dog in on a little bit of something, something. Here's another email. Mac, what'd you Google to find all this stuff? I did a search on charcoal container inside the grill. I've learned that it's called a basket. But if you do that, you'll see all these different pictures of all these different accoutrements that people have designed, some themselves, it looks like, and then the different way they configure charcoal so they don't scorch stuff. But then we've been laughing about the way we do. Wait a minute. All right, hold on, Kim. I don't know how to do this to join a call. But Montana Man just called. So hold on. Hey, Schwartz. Hello?
What?
Who's this?
You got me?
Yeah, hold on 1 second. Schwartz, what are you doing? Call on my other line so I can put you both on.
Which one's that?
949. Where do you want me to get my cell phone? Do you want me to get my cell phone number? Call on that number, and that way you can be on with the chef since you badmouthed him a while ago. All right, so Montana Man going to join us here. Kim, we continue with the chef. Montana Man's probably had enough of this. He being a foodie himself.
Yeah.
So no, but you don't cook with charcoal. So this is kind of a charcoal based program. But we're okay with that. Joining us from the great state of Montana is none other than himself, Montana Man. Rob, what's going on? How are you doing?
No, I'm heading to town, but figured I'd pile in. You guys were talking about scorching food, and I was figuring the easiest food to scorch is skin-on chicken thighs. I have seen more black skin-on chicken thighs in my lifetime, and it took me a little while to figure it out. But talking about, if the chef could talk about how not to scorch a skin-on chicken thigh.
Okay, all right. We're on it. What are you going to town for?
Massage therapy.
Oh, my God. Are you kidding me? Are you going to hit a strip joint, too? What the? And since when did we start calling in therapy? So you get the VA to pay for this or some shit?
No, I wish they could. It started out with the chronic headaches, and they actually brought it to something related to a car accident 20 years ago, and the massage therapy worked it out. So
okay. So
headaches go away.
That's awesome. Does you get the massage from a man or a woman?
What do you think?
It is Montana. That's where they made Bareback Mountain. I think maybe
Brokeback Mountain.
Oops, my bad. It's a woman, I think. Yes.
Yeah.
All right. That is.
And the bratwurst in beer is mandatory.
No, it's
just
really not.
Pulling them out of the package and throwing them on the grill is a non-player. So
what about? Are you
hear that? I'm usually a 50-50 beer to water
exchange rate.
Spoiler, kind of. Yeah.
What?
Cook them to about medium rare in the pot when you're simmering them, and then on the grill from medium rare to just over medium. You know, somewhere medium, medium well, so there's a hair of pink left in them. That's money.
All right, what about, wait, I have one more question for you. Are you a charcoal guy or a propane guy?
I am a propane guy just due to necessity, but with that, a ton of those lava rocks. I probably, like, triple the amount of lava rocks I put in my propane grill just because it dissipates the heat much better.
Oh.
Then you can retain heat longer at a lower temperature. So, I mean, you've got just a better ability to control it. And once your lava rocks get seasoned, you know, it's never going to be charcoal, but it's still, you know, not straight propane.
Okay. Right. Why are you calling the chef a pussy for not grilling till it's 50?
Well, because that's just the case. I mean, come on.
Come on. 50
degrees, shit. You're out of freaking grilling season for 7 months.
I'm with you. Kim, do you want to defend yourself? 50 degrees. All right, Montana man. Good luck with your massage. Good luck.
I have no idea. I have no idea what Montana man said.
What? You couldn't hear him?
No, I couldn't hear him. So was he insulting me?
Well, he said, you know, hell, we're up here in the frozen tundra, 50 degrees. Come on, man. That's way too hot to be grilling. You need to bust that thing out. But I'm pissed. Okay, here's what he wants. Here's what he wanted to know, though. What he wants to know is what he's seen burn the most is skin-on chicken thighs. And that's because there's fat between, right? There's some fat inside the skin and whatnot. What is there any secret other than in paying attention when you're grilling to not burning skin-on chicken thighs?
Well, you have a water pan underneath part of the grill if you're using charcoal or if you're using propane, and then you grill them. You have to brown them, and then you put them. It's still going to be plenty hot. You create that steam, and you still get the grill marks on your chicken breast. And you won't blacken them, I should say.
Okay, but they are a challenge, though, because of the amount of fat normally between the skin and the thigh. Yes?
And the skin on all chicken, whether it's breast, leg, thigh, wings, that you have to pay attention because it does drip into the directly on, if you're using gas, it'll still flame up. And, so you set a water, aluminum water pan right on the grates and the grill itself underneath the grates. And then you'll eliminate that problem.
Okay. All right. You know what? It's, the solution's simple. This is simple because, and let me tell you, if I close my eyes, I see chicken thighs on the grill, the flame spooling up with the squirt bottle. Steak tended not to have as much fat as the chicken did. When the chicken went on there, flames everywhere. Get me the squirt bottle. All right. Dad needs the squirt bottle. You look out onto the deck and he's out there grilling flame everywhere, right? Hope he's moving that chicken
and
quick.
He goes through about 2 quarts of water in the sprint bottle.
That's the truth. Yeah, Montana Man says he likes the water pan idea. The water pan idea is a good idea. If you go online and check these configurations out, I mean, it's pretty cool. You'll get a lot of good ideas, depending on what you're cooking. You know, and what's really interesting is you see there's one configuration of the charcoal in the middle in a dog dish, right? And all these chicken wings that are kind of this golden brown color, right? On the edge getting turned and getting basted with sauce, and not one black mark on any of it. It doesn't have to be that way. It doesn't have to be
that
way.
No, it doesn't. But nonetheless, Mac, don't start basting the wings with sauce until the last 15 minutes because you just want that sauce to caramelize and stick to the wings.
Right. But Kim, if you're
– black.
Okay, let me give you the visual picture. Okay, Weber kettle. Okay.
Yeah.
Charcoal in the doggy dish, and then we've got some kind of seasoned chip in the middle of that. Okay, in the middle of the in the middle of the grill, with the doggy dish below, directly below, you have some look like some seasoning type of chips. Let's just call them hickory or mesquite. You have some of those in the center. and then all around the edge, so there it's never over direct heat, are all these chicken wings stacked. All right, and now that could be pieces of chicken, so it's never over direct heat, so it's not going to burn. Right, so if it's not over direct heat, I can slap on as much of that sauce as I want, and then I shut the grill, and all they are is they're baking essentially because they're not over right. direct fire, right or wrong?
Yeah.
Hello.
It's good for me.
Well, yeah, and that's the key, is what you're doing is really rescuing the food from the direct heat, still using the charcoal and getting the flavor of all of that. Which everybody loves,
yeah.
But the direct heat, it's a killer. It's a killer. The direct heat?
That's a game breaker.
That's a game crusher. It's a game crusher. And now I'm looking at these pieces of, and it looks like this is kind of the same configuration, but it's that chimney thing that you talked about where you start charcoal in, but they're using it to cook as well. They're using it to produce heat. And then there's seasoning chips above that on top of the grill. And then there's chicken thighs with the leg on them, that are all on the outside. So they're bigger pieces of chicken. What they did was they just narrowed down, where the charcoal is and they built it higher vertically. Same volume of heat being produced. You shut that lid and then you grill. So, you know, this is a little bit disturbing, Kim, because why did it take us so long to figure this out?
Good question.
Why did the spray bottle exist in our culture for so long?
I have no idea, Mac. I wish I could answer that question, but we have it now. That's all that matters. And as far as I'm concerned, you know, now that we have one, it's always beside your grill when you're grilling.
Oh my God! There's some hilarious pictures. If you do a search on like spray bottle grilling, you see what you. If you do a search on spray bottle grilling, you see the world that we live in. Okay, which is massive amounts of flame, burn food, and a spray bottle attempting to knock down the fire that's coming out of the fat over the food that's over the direct charcoal. Come on, man.
Yeah.
What's up with that?
So, I don't know.
Somebody figure it out. I have a question for you, Mac. Well, it's not actually for you because you don't really know a whole lot about food. And I say that with all due respect. Okay, look, don't say that bullshit to me. I say that with all due respect means you just said something disrespectful, okay? But it's not entirely incorrect. So he goes on. Does the chef's wine preference taste when he is drinking wine with food that's grilled? He said his porterhouse preference doesn't change. So if I put a ribeye in a porterhouse, you take the porterhouse in front of you?
Yeah.
Damn it.
Absolutely.
All right. I'm okay with it. Here, all these years, I thought you were a ribeye guy, and you're not. Okay.
Well.
I know. I'm telling you. I'm a little bit taken aback by it all.
I like ribeyes. Because I can cook a ribeye and eat it all myself. When I cook a porterhouse, how I like to cook a porterhouse, it feeds four people.
Oh.
You know, it weighs over 2 pounds. Usually it's 2 inches thick. You have a filet where everybody gets some. You have a New York strip where everybody gets some. And I like it rare to medium rare. But that's why I like porterhouses. But for me, by myself, or I'll give my wife a little bit of it, I'll take a ribeye. Yeah,
All right.
You know, that's just the way I like it.
Okay. All right. The Next, here's another email. It is an interesting question relative to the intellectual capability of people that grill. I experienced the same nightmare that you both did as a child eating blackened food. I don't think I ever ate a grilled hot dog that wasn't predominantly black. And
yep.
What I thought was that was the way it was supposed to be. I can't remember when or where it actually happened, but I remember eating my first grilled hot dog that wasn't completely black. My first reaction was, is this thing done? Question mark. I then found out not only was it done, it was delicious, and it tasted much better without the charcoal taste in my mouth. Why did it take so long? I'm sitting here thinking, pondering your question. Fire. Does this, either we need to turn it quicker, we need to get it further away from the fire, or we need to control the fire. But serving this kind of crap to your family every Sunday throughout the summer is a non-starter. Figure it out.
But, as you both said, we
slugged it down.
Hey, the food police will show up and take your grill away. That's all I'm saying. If you're driving down the street and you see smoke pouring out, you go in the backyard and tell them you're the grill police.
It is. It's honestly brutal. When you think about it, all you're doing is you're taking your stove and oven and you're taking it outside. You have to find a way to control the fire. Once you control the fire, then you can use it as you would. But cooking over fire is a difficult proposition. And that's the problem when you do thighs or anything with skin on. You know, the fat runs into the fire leaps up, and you have blackened food. And so your point is, but now, Kim, even if you don't put sauce on it, you're still run the chance of the fat is going to increase the flame. So so this strategy for skin on, it should be cooked initially on indirect heat so some of that fat goes away and it'll fall into a pan. And then towards the end, when most of that fat has been cooked out of the chicken, then you put sauce on it and then you put it over direct heat, because it's hard to control when there's that much fat coming out of it and you got flame everywhere.
Well, what I would do is – you start your chicken breast side down, skin side down on the direct heat, and you watch it like a hawk. And you all you want to do is get the skin a little crisp, like you're talking a couple of minutes.
Yeah.
Then you take it off and put it on the direct heat. After you've done that on both sides.
Wait, direct?
That's only a couple of minutes now, folks.
Wait. You said then you take it off and put it on direct heat. You meant indirect heat?
You put it off the direct heat, on the indirect heat, and let it go. And then you can start saucing it when you want. On the indirect heat. But you want to brown the skin and crisp up the skin, and you do that on the direct heat. You just don't try to cook the whole thing.
Yeah, I disagree.
On direct heat.
I don't like that idea. Here's what I think. I think that's beyond most people's capability, because you've got all that fat. You got a whole. Let's just say you're cooking 8 pieces of chicken, and you got all that fat into the charcoal. I think you're blacking at the end. I think you containerize the charcoal. You essentially bake the chicken, and a lot of the fat goes to where there's no charcoal. And after, I don't know, I would say at the end, as you say, to begin to put sauce on it, I would say at that point, when you put the sauce on it, now you don't have too much fat. You can go ahead and put it over, get a little bit of brown, and then it goes back to indirect heat. I think it's too hard to do the flame broiler, for God's sakes. And I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think that's hard. That's just me. I could be wrong.
Well, you do have to pay attention.
Yeah.
Either way you do it with the chicken, because of the fat in the skin, and you know, even with the ribeye steak, there's fat around the edge of the steak.
Oh man! Yeah, you got to pay attention.
And you got to pay attention with that also.
Yeah. No doubt. But again, yeah, I would even say maybe that has merit even with the ribeye. I'm going to try that. I'm going to try the indirect approach with the ribeye and then move it over to the direct later after you've dissipated some of the fat so you don't have to deal with uncontrolled flame situation and see if it tastes any different. Little experiment. And kind of reversing the order with high fat content dishes like skin on chicken, like ribeye steaks. Reverse, we're going to do reverse osmosis.
There you go.
All right. So we're going to mess with it. All right. What do you, hey, what's up with your Dodgers? They suck. They got the worst record in baseball, I think, don't they?
And yeah, they're only 8 games out on the way to 26. Games out.
What happened?
They are cocked out this year, and I don't care if it's injuries or whatever. It doesn't look good for the boys in blue.
It doesn't, and the shortstop, he's out for the season. I saw an article the other day, and I was like, whoa, the Dodgers are 17-26. The Padres are 17-28. No, the Reds are worse than they are. The Reds are 15-29. Miami's 16-27. So you guys aren't the worst team. Texas is 17-28. The White Sox are 11-29, and Kansas City is 13-30. Whoa. Baltimore 13-30. So you got plenty of company down in the basement. But probably the surprise of Major League Baseball, which is a team that went to the seventh game of the World Series, is 9 games under 500 in the middle of May, but they went on a run last year where they won what I don't know 40 out of 41 games, something like that. It was crazy.
Yeah.
So, but they're struggling. Maybe the computer is not saying the right thing.
I don't know. I just, you gotta have the players, you know, Yankees have players, Red Sox, even Minnesota is tied with Cleveland, for God's sake. So,
let me tell you.
You gotta have a pitching staff and hitters.
Let me tell you, that computer stuff in Los Angeles is not gonna play very long, okay? Like, look, we don't care what your computer says, okay? All we care is you better win, baby. You better give me some Al Davis love.
that Robert cost him the World Series last year with that mismanagement.
Down the bullpen.
As far as I'm concerned.
That bullpen nonsense.
That's just my opinion. The rest of you can go. Never mind.
No.
Hey, 20 years, they finally get there. And they can't let Kershaw pitch past the sixth inning. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, it's stupid.
Oh, that's just killing me.
Hey, you could come on the Yankee. You could get on the Yankee bus. We got good young players. We don't like follow the computer all the time. Yeah.
Hey, I have a hard time just saying Yankees.
Come on. That's it. No. That's the old Yankees. These are the new, young, homegrown Yankees. Come on. Get on the bus.
I tell you what.
Who's cooler?
A hell of a team. Boston this year.
Who's cooler than
Aaron? Hitting the lights out.
Who's cooler than Aaron Judge?
Nobody. Nobody now.
Nobody.
Nobody.
Now. He's come on, Aaron Judge.
I agree.
He's the coolest thing going. He's the coolest thing going. All right. Any any big plans for the weekend?
Oh yeah, I'm gonna watch the royal wedding tomorrow. I'm getting up at 4 p.m. And if you believe that, I have a bridge in Brooklyn for you to buy.
You know what though? We like Harry. All right. If I'm awake,
I do like Harry.
If I'm awake,
no, I'm gonna watch the Dodgers tonight, and that's and. We'll see.
No, but, let me tell you, Prince Harry's legit. He's a combat veteran from both Iraq and Afghanistan. He is the way he's opened up recently, I think, about mental health, talking about the passing of his mother, the effect that had on both he and his brother. He and his brother made a video that was very well received in the United Kingdom about mental health and get help and to talk about it. And then the other thing he's the primary mover in is the Invictus Games, and that is games for wounded veterans from all over the world show up, and he is I talked to somebody who got to meet him and shake his hand there, and they said, you know, he's a cool guy, and so I think you know, in a day and age when a lot of those royal people are not a whole lot. He's legit, and so I hope he's happy.
I do too.
An LA girl.
He's got a great game. He did a couple of tours in Afghanistan as a pilot.
Right.
So and what he's doing with the Invictus Games is tremendous. He's a stand-up guy.
He's legit. So if I'm awake. And I'm 50-50 shot I will be at whatever. It's going to be 3 in the morning out here. But you know what? When I was a kid, I used to love to watch that stuff. My grandmother, and I still have these, I have albums in my garage, okay, from the 1950s, from the Columbia Record Company, right, with the red label in the middle. It's bagpipe music because my grandfather loved bagpipe music. But what I used to love were the Scottish guys and the Brit guys who would give the commands. Yeah. And they'd start their stuff. I would sit there and I'd ask my grandma, "Will you put the records on for me?" And she'd say, yes, Michael. And I'd listen to those commands. I'd love that stuff. And so the Brits have great ceremony. So I like that stuff.
Oh, they do.
They give great weddings. They give great weddings. You know, my favorite though is when they have all the cavalry guys, you know, and it's like these are the Royal Highland Dragoons who were established in 900, who fought in Napoleon, who were in, you know, and they go through all the, like, the history of the unit. It's like, wow, that's pretty rich. I had a friend who told me, when you go into like the headquarters of those places, they have their history in there. You know, for the British Army, it's from, you know, from France, from Gibraltar, from Africa when they were down in Africa. They said it's pretty mind blowing the lineage of the British military. So get a chance to see it. Maybe tomorrow if I'm awake. But if I'm asleep, I'll catch it on the replay. Good luck to Harry though. Harry, Megan from Kim and I, good luck there, kids.
Yep.
Rip it up.
Pretty cool.
Pretty cool. Yeah. No, he's a cool guy. His brothers seem to handle that whole thing pretty well. What I like most, though, I like the mental health stuff that they did. I thought that was really cool because, you know what, it's not easy. I mean, they show videotape of him walking behind his mother's casket at the age of like 11 or 12, you know, the whole nation watching. And, you know, his mother's just his mother, you know, he's 11. His mother was in her 30s, and now he's got to do that in public. You know, come on, it's amazing that kid's even close to being sane with the life he's lived. But, you know, he seemed to have a decent head on his shoulders, served his country, and now doing good things, both in the world of mental health and for veterans. So very much, you know, Harry might be an honorary member of the All Marine Radio board. So I might have to send him a letter. Hey, you don't need to you don't need to respond to this. You have been appointed as an honorary member of the All Marine Radio Board of Directors. No response from you is required, Mr. Wales. So, anyway. All right. Good luck. Good luck to you and your Dodgers, too.
Yeah. But thank you for your phony wishes.
Well, hey, look,
anyway,
I offered to let you come on the Yankee bandwagon. You can hop on. I mean, we have the coolest player in baseball, Aaron Judge. Come on, man.
I will watch them when they're on, however. In fact, true confessions, I have been watching the Yankees when they come on.
Your closet. Come out. Come out of the closet, bro. We're past that. Come out of the closet. You don't need to hide in there. Come on out, man.
I'll talk to you later about it.
You don't need to hide.
I'm on the edge.
You don't need to hide in the closet anymore.
74 years of being a Dodger fan, right on the edge.
Yeah, they left New York. Come on, man. Be in New York. You're a New York guy. You know that. All right. That'll do it. Thanks there, Sheffy. We'll talk to you.
You have a great weekend, and best of all, love to your family.
Right. And you'll never, ever look at a stainless steel dog bowl again. Without laughing.
I will never look at a dog bowl any other way. That's rich.
All right, man.
All right. Have a good one, buddy.
All right. There you have it. The chef. Montana man going to get his massage. Well, how do these guys get these deals? All right, I got to go to the DMV. Ask me, Mac, how fired up are you to go to the DMV? You know what? Let me tell you, the DMV it used to be worse. Let me tell you how. Cell phones weren't invented. So you couldn't sit there and read or do something. You had to sit there and look at the crazy, at the insanity of the DMV. Now, you're rescued by your cell phone. So it's not as bad as it used to be, but being a Yankee fan is the greatest feeling in the world. And you save a shit ton of money. What other team can you pass down jerseys from generation to generation and have it mean something? All of my 22-year-old's Jeter gear is now worn by my 11-year-old. That's right. I'm from one of my former Marines. He's a smart one, too. He's a smart one, and he's got a smart mouth, too. But no, Yankees. Mac, would you review for me, how the hell can you be a Yankee fan? I looked your dad up. He managed the A's, the Padres, the Angels, and then in parentheses, twice, the Reds, the Red Sox, and Cleveland. He coached for the Giants. How do we get Yankees out of that? You know what? That's a good question. And I want you to recognize how legit the Yankees are for me. Okay, I'm a kid. I'm growing up in Sacramento, California. Who's on TV the one game they show every Saturday? The Yankees. Who's the star of the Yankees in the early 60s? Mickey Mantle. Whose initials do Mickey Mantle have? Oh, Michael McNamara.
What?
Yeah, so who was my guy? Mickey Mantle. Who did Mike McNamara take his white t-shirts, and write number 7 on the back of those t-shirts and NY on the front and get spanked by his mother? That would be me, okay? Then she relinquished, and whenever she would buy me t-shirts, she would buy me an extra T-shirt that I could convert into my homemade Yankee uniform. So then my dad gets to Major League Baseball, so I got to root for his team, right? One of the most thrilling moments of my life, following my dad around as a baseball guy, 1968, Mickey Mantle's last year playing baseball. I got to see him play. He played in two of the three games that the Yankees played in Oakland, and by that time he was not the same player, but he was still playing. Hobbling around, hit a home run, hitting right-handed, hit it to right center field in the Oakland Coliseum. It was awesome. So then, I'm waiting in the tunnel where all the players come out, where we waited for my dad. Could give a rip about the visiting team most of the time. Not when the Yankees were there. The Yankees, this is back when they wore their blue blazers with their New York crest on their pocket when they were on the road. So the door opens, and in the front is Yogi Berra. In the middle is Mickey Mantle, and in the back is Whitey Ford. Each one of them has a beer or something to drink in their left hand in a cup and a pen in their right hand. And they were talking, and they didn't slow down. They had, with their pens, they walked. And when he came through that door, I heard the angels sing. Ah. It was glowing around him, and I just stood there like a nine-year-old kid, my jaw hanging on. That's Mickey Mantle. That's right. And so I followed him. I didn't ask for his autograph. My dad got me his autograph. I have a ball that says, "To Mike, best wishes, Mickey Mantle." He has a really cool signature, by the way. They don't even teach penmanship in school anymore. They haven't. So, yeah, so nobody knows how to sign an autograph, for God's sakes. So I follow him. Like, he's signing autographs. They're talking back and forth. You know, people are saying hi, and, you know, he says hi, and then he's talking to Whitey Ford and Yogi Berra, and they never stopped. They did this, like, in every city, I'm sure. They never stopped. They just kept walking, and then they walked right on the bus, and they signed the whole way, and then they were off on the bus. And I thought, I can die now. I've seen Mickey Mantle. And so once my dad stops managing in Major League Baseball, I've got no team. Like, who do I root for now? I've been a mercenary my whole life. I've been a hired gun. Yeah, a man with no allegiance, simply whoever your dad's. I even had to root for the Cleveland Indians, right? My dad made a recruiting commercial for the Marine Corps. It's one of the single worst recruiting commercials you've ever seen in your life. But his heart was in the right place. Anyway, there's a Marines from RS Cleveland in it. So, that's about 1994. I swore off baseball for a few years, and then Derek Jeter makes that play against the Oakland A's in the Oakland Coliseum where he cuts the ball off between home plate and first base and flips it to the catcher, and Jason Giambi gets tagged out. And I think to myself, who am I kidding? I'm a Yankee fan. So that's my Yankee story. Yeah, it goes back to Mickey Mantle. I'm not a mercenary. I didn't pick him when I was in my 30s or 40s or 50s or now that I'm 60. I didn't pick him in any of those year groups. I picked him when I was a little kid. I used to play Mickey Mantle, right, when we played wiffle ball. And this is what a kook I was as a kid. We play wiffle ball, me and my friends. And the game was if you had to pick a team, and if the guy was right-handed, you had to hit right-handed. If he was left-handed, you had to hit left-handed. And so my buddy liked to be the Red Sox. I would cut out the lineup card, the lineup from the box score in the newspaper. I would cut that out. I would tape it to the wiffle ball bat. You're the Red Sox. This is their lineup, okay? I'm the Yankees. This is their lineup. So, and we play wiffle ball. That's right. But because I didn't have any brothers, like I had, I was by myself and I had to make up games. I used to make up this game where I would throw the ball from across the street onto the roof of our house and then I would sprint to catch it. I'd be diving in the shrubs. So I would pretend that my mom's shrubs were the low fence in right field at Yankee Stadium that Mickey Mantle used to dive into. Yeah, I'd be diving into my mom's shrubs. She'd see me, and she looked at me and thought, he's not right in the head. My only son, he's not right in the head. I'd throw the ball on the roof, and it'd hit and then kind of roll up the roof, and I'd come charge it across the street, right across the lawn, and it'd be rolling and come off the roof. And then if it fell, it was a base hit or a double or something like that. And I used to play. And I'd go out there and waste an hour or so of my life. But, yeah, but, you know, back when I was a kid, there was no, like, New York Yankee hats for little kids. That didn't happen, I wanted to say. That kind of merchandising by Major League Baseball didn't start until, like, the late 70s or the 80s. Yeah, I mean, are you kidding me? I would have died to have had anything that said Oakland A's on it or Cincinnati Reds, but they just didn't produce that much of that stuff. And there was no internet, so it didn't proliferate. You know, you could get a hat. But, you know, the hats they had for kids, they look stupid. Come on. They were little kids' stupid hats. They weren't like legit baller hats. So, anyway, my thanks to the chef for coming on today. Have a great weekend. Yeah, Jason said amen to him being smart. Have a great weekend. This program repeats itself momentarily. I just missed a call from Montana, man. He evidently has something to say, so stand by. Or not. There's only one way to find out. He's done. Keep the people, the parents and the families that have kids at Santa Fe High School in your thoughts and prayers. Somebody walked into art class and began shooting people. So what can you do? What should you do about it? Check on where your local school district is and find out and then make sure that they hear your voice. Study the shit out of it. Okay, after you put armed people at the schools. Okay, come up with some kind of course. There's, I'm sure, school districts that have it already. Borrow what they do. Certify the people that are going to be at your schools and protect your kids. That's as good as you can do. But this stuff is ridiculous, and it needs to stop. And I don't know how you're going to stop it. The only thing you can do is mitigate it. Okay? I think it's your heart, my heart, everybody's heart that says this stuff needs to stop. But let me just tell you this. There's crazy people out there, right? There's crazy, and it's exacerbated by every kid being asked, how does that make you feel constantly whenever they face any adversity? Instead of the way we were raised, which was shut up, suck it up, and go do it. Yeah. Yeah, what they feel is the most important thing. So when their feelings are hurt, you know, when their feelings are hurt, that's the most significant thing in the world, man. Their feelings are hurt. Yeah, in this pussified culture that we have today. So, anyway, raise your kids better. Raise them not to be sissies. Okay, teach them to be tough. That there's, your feelings are going to get hurt. It's part of being a human being. Okay, if they're hurt enough, go fight them. But, Dad, I'll get suspended from school. That's okay. We'll send you to another school. But stand up for yourself. Oh, Mac. Yeah. It's part of learning how to be a grown-up, dealing with adversity and all the rest of it. But, you know, it's horrible that these things happen, but they're out there. We need people with guns at our schools. And people that won't admit that's true will continue. And let me tell you, it would be appropriate if they're the ones that paid the price when these things happen. Everybody who doesn't want a gun at a school, okay, it would be appropriate if they paid the price when these things happen. But they won't, because their kids will go to a different school, and you can bet your ass that that school will have security because they have the money to afford it. They'll just be sanctimonious with public policy and other bullshit. It's like celebrities and guns. Oh, we hate guns. Why do all your security people have guns? Well, this is different. Oh, really? Why don't you live what you say? Why don't you have security people? But they can't they talk to people? Oh, not when it comes to my security. Yeah, no shit. I'm just sick of the I'm sick of the double standards. I'm sick of people that the hummingbird people that want the world to be a certain way. Well, it's not that way. There are guns out there. There are crazy people out there, right? So, anyway, have a great weekend. Watch Prince Harry's wedding. He's a good dude. All right? He's fought for his country. He's interested in post-combat related mental health, as is his brother. He does things for people that are wounded, things that are designed to enable them. And God bless him for doing that. Wish him all the best of luck to his on his wedding. This program repeats itself. I've already said have a great weekend, but have a great weekend. All Marine Radio on a Friday. Hopefully the Gunner will be back on Monday. Have a great one. Out.